Thank you for choosing Weekly Politics as your podcast today. Last couple episodes I've been going over Israel, and that's a really important conflict to go over just because of how it affects the Middle East and how that could actually affect the balance of the world. It doesn't necessarily affect the West as much as it affects the eastern side of the world because it's closer to the eastern side. There's a lot more eastern nations involved with it. I mean, the only Western country that is directly involved with this war right now is Israel. So it's really, I mean, yes, it affects the West, but it does not affect the West as much as it affects, say, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Iraq. You understand what I'm saying. It affects the Eastern side or the Eastern culture a whole lot more than it affects the Western culture. But it's still largely important for both cultures. For the West, I mean, we love Israel, so it's largely important for us, especially as a Christian. For the East, they're Islam, and Palestine is an Islamic state, so it's largely important for them. So it's just good to understand that, to get that out of the way real quick. But let's talk about something other than Israel to start this episode off. Let's talk about the Speaker of the House. We'll start with the Speaker of the House, then we'll go to elections and economy. But the Speaker of the House is nobody still. Patrick Henry is still the temporary Speaker of the House. And this is really interesting, and I think this is one of those few times where you can read fake news and understand what's going on. So you know Babylon Bee is like the fake news you can trust. I love Babylon Bee. They're amazing. I'll go on to a Babylon Bee's website. I'll just scroll through and read the random stories on the Babylon Bee, and I get a good laugh out of it. So they had this one thing on their website, and it said that House Republicans had to watch old Schoolhouse Rock episodes in order to understand what they're supposed to be doing. And if you're anyone under the age of 16, you might not understand what Schoolhouse Rock is because, you know, you're part of the newer generation where they might not show that in school anymore. So if you're under 16 and you don't know what Schoolhouse Rock is, it's basically a kids episode, animated episode made in the early 2000s. And it just tells you how to, how bills and laws are made. So, I thought that was pretty funny. Because that's exactly what's happening. Right now, the House Republicans don't seem to know what they're doing. You know, they ousted Kevin McCarthy because they wanted it was a very specific concession, too. They wanted Kevin McCarthy to do, and he didn't do it. So, you know, they had to oust him because he didn't do, And they had to replace them with, and, you know, they had plan B, which plan B was, So they had no plan whatsoever. They ousted him for who knows what. They were going to replace him with, they didn't even know. They still don't know how they're going to replace him. They have no plan. I'm a Republican. I'm going to openly say this. I am a Republican. I used to love saying I'm a Republican, and I used to love saying that because I looked at the Republican Party and I was like, this is what we stand for. We stand for civility. We stand for order and peace. We stand for the people. We don't want a government controlling us from the top down. No, we want to control the government from the bottom up. That is how society is supposed to work in terms of government. Unfortunately, the Republican Party doesn't seem to be acting like that right now. They're fighting over Speaker of the House. So if you want to know what kind of power Speaker of the House has, the Speaker of the House is the person who introduces bills onto the House floor. So to put this into perspective, when you have the House, you have subcommittees, and a bill that is proposed will go through a subcommittee. If it passes a subcommittee, sorry, let me start over. You want a bill to become a law. You can go to your house, your representative of your district in your state, and you can say, hey, I would like this to happen. And then your representative can be like, oh, that sounds like a cool idea. Yeah, let's do that. So what he'll do is he'll now co-sponsor a bill with a couple other representatives, and they'll introduce it into a subcommittee. If it passes this subcommittee, it goes to a committee. If it passes the committee, it can be introduced onto the House floor. Now, in order to be introduced onto the House floor, the Speaker of the House has to say, yes, let us introduce this onto the House floor. That is essentially the only power Speaker of the House has. Yes, I mean, he makes rules, but the rules only apply to the House of Representatives itself. And the rules that McCarthy passed were fine. I was fine with them. Any citizen can walk in and see the pe or see their people's representatives doing work. That's fine with me. And so why doesn't understand why they're fighting. They don't want Kevin McCarthy, but they don't have any other idea for who they want. They don't have any concessions in mind. They don't have anything in mind whatsoever. And it just doesn't make sense. Why would you oust Kevin McCarthy if you don't know why you're gonna oust him? You don't know what you want instead. You basically, the Speaker of the House has essentially no power. Because even if, let's pretend that the Freedom Caucus gets every single thing that they want, which is impossible because the House Republicans have a 7-vote majority right now. It's 219 to 212. That's a 7-vote majority. It only takes four Republicans to either not be there, well, not be there, but to vote with the Democrats. Seven Republicans to not be there in order for this resolution, any resolution, to not pass. So it just makes no sense to oust Kevin McCarthy. But let's pretend, let's all get our things together and let's just pretend that we are in a fairy tale land. And in this fairy tale land, we have an amazing, perfect Speaker of the House and a Republican Party that is 100% united, never disagrees with each other, okay? And they pass a spending bill in the House, and the spending bill says, hey, let's cut spending by 40%, hypothetically speaking, and it passes the House. And then it goes to the Senate. Well, in the Senate, it has to pass a subcommittee. And it's not going to because the way committees work is that the way you choose how many Republicans and Democrats are in committees is whoever has the majority gets the majority in the committees as well. And Democrats have the majority of the Senate, which means they also have the majority of every single committee and subcommittee in the Senate. So it goes to a Senate subcommittee. And let's pretend magically they didn't read the bill and they just sort of, passed it for whatever reason. Then it goes to a committee. And let's pretend they did the same thing. Now it goes to Chuck Schumer in the Senate. He's not going to introduce that bill on the Senate floor. He's going to say, you know what? No, I don't want this bill. I want certain concessions made, and then I will sign on. And the House Republicans, well, they're all Freedom Caucus members in this perfect world, and they don't like concessions because that means you have to compromise and agree with the other side, and that's a terrible thing. You can never agree with the other side because, that might actually get something done if you agreed with the other side. So we can't do that. You see what I'm getting with this? We have a Democrat Senate, a Democrat president who's going to do the same thing as the Democrat Senate. And all we have are 7-vote lead in the House. That's it. That's all we have. Technically, we have the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court doesn't make laws. The Supreme Court shoots down laws. If some lawmaker, whether in a state or the federal government, makes a law that's unconstitutional, the Supreme Court's gonna shoot it down. It's just the way it works. They don't do anything with spending bills unless it's unconstitutional. And the last time I checked anyway, there hasn't been a single proposed bill that is unconstitutional in terms of spending. Yet. So it just there's nothing Republicans can do. I understand. I love the idea of cutting government spending. I love that idea. It's an amazing idea. We need to cut spending. And the reason why is because we're $33 trillion in debt right now. And those $33 trillion in debt are not paying themselves off. We have an enormous amount of interest we pay every single year. The last time I checked, it was over $800 billion in interest that the United States pays every single year. Let's put that into perspective a bit. Everyone says that America spends the most on its military out of every single country, which is technically true. What they don't understand is we also spend the most on interest on our debt over every single country. Because our interest that we spend is almost as high as our military spending. And our military is the most powerful military in the world. So let's put that on pause for a second. Let's pretend we paid off all of our debt so we no longer have interest. And we're not spending more than we make, which means Social Security, everything you put into Social Security, you get right back. When you're young and you turn 18, you can sign papers or you turn I should say you turn 14, because the legal age is 14. You turn 14, you get your first job, you sign papers, you can say, I want a certain amount of this amount to go towards Social Security. That would be amazing if that was an option. You could say, hey, instead of it being forced on you, instead of your part of your paycheck, 6% or 12% of your paycheck going to Social Security, no matter what you do, no matter what you want, it would be amazing if instead it was, I want 12% of my paycheck going to Social Security. Social Security then puts that into a bank account that gains interest for, let's say it's 4% per year, whatever, basically to fight inflation. So that when you get that money back, it's not such a tiny amount compared to the rate of inflation. And now when you turn 60 or whatever the law is for you to retire and you can get that money back, they don't add to it. They don't take out from other people's accounts. They simply give you the exact amount that you put in throughout all of your years of working, plus whatever interest was earned on it while it was in the bank account. They never spend any of it. They leave it sit there. That would be amazing. That is how Social Security should work. But they should also have laws that say, hey, you know what we need to do? We need to allow companies to also have Social Security networks in them. Allow businesses even to have or advance their 401ks to act more like Social Security. That would be cool, but it's not. That's not how it works. I mean, yeah, they're 401ks, but they're not the exact same thing. They're a little bit different. So that would be amazing. Then we don't have to spend as much money. And then that $836 billion or whatever we pay in interest, we could spend on other things. Or we could just lower taxes, you know? Lower taxes, lower income tax, lower property tax, lower tariffs, lower all those types of taxes that hinder economic advancements and that hinder economic activity. And then the people of America are like, hey, there's way less taxes now. I can spend money I'm actually making. I can start a business. I can hire people. I can pay people higher wages. I can buy a house. I can start a family. All of these amazing things. That would be so cool. I agree. That would be amazing to have right here, right now. But it's not going to happen. And the reason why it's not going to happen is because Republicans do not control the Senate. Republicans do not control the presidency. All Republicans control is the House, but they don't even control that. I mean, yeah, the majority of the House is Republican, but they don't have control over their own party. I'm a Republican, and right now I feel ashamed to say it just because of the chaos going on in the House right now. So if you're like me, you're an average voter like me, and you're looking at how do I vote in this 2024 election? I mean, Republicans are chaotic in the House. They're not getting things done. I don't know what to do, man. I don't like Biden, but I also don't want a government that does what the Republicans are doing in the House, where they're just causing chaos and destruction everywhere. I don't want that. I just want a government that functions and works, and then I want my policies put in place. If you're the average voter and you're the average American like I am, and you want stuff like that done, I agree. I wouldn't want to think about voting for a Republican either. But here's the thing. There's more than one Republican candidate running for president. If you really, really don't want Biden to become president, and you're not a fan of RFK because you don't like, let's say you don't like what he says about vaccines, or you don't like what he says about autism, or you don't like what he says about climate change, or guns, or whatever. Whatever it is you don't like about him, you don't want him either. And you're not a fan of Marianne Williamson because she's not going to win the presidency anyway. And the No Labels group who's running for president most likely soon, you know nothing about them. You know, I mean, they were in the Senate. They did maybe one or two things that was good, but that's it. They don't stand a chance against the establishment. You're right, they don't. Here's the thing. There's more than one Republican running for president, and there is hope. There's Ron DeSantis, there's Vivek Ramaswamy, there's Nikki Haley. If you really don't want a Democrat or Joe Biden to be president again, and you are a registered Republican, go caucus in your state. Primary for the person you want to win. That is how we win elections. I understand you might not be super into politics. You don't have to be into politics. I live in Iowa, so we have a caucus in Iowa. All you have to do is go to the place where you vote and caucus. You put in your vote for whoever you want to be the Republican nominee, and then you walk out. It's anonymous voting. No one knows who you voted for. It doesn't matter. But the person who you voted for gets one more vote and one step closer to being nominated. So if this is not what you want, I understand. It's America is in a very chaotic spot. So please go caucus for who you want to win the nominee. It's really important. We can't have established people like Donald Trump or Joe Biden winning every single time. We can't keep having rematches. It's not going to work. Joe Biden's already won against Donald Trump. I don't want a rematch of 2020. 2020 is over. I want to put that behind me. I want someone different, and I'm sure you do too. So let's caucus for someone who we actually can agree with, someone who is actually going to get things done, someone who knows what he's talking about, someone who has tested experience and is not a polarizing figure like Trump or Biden. So go caucus for someone if you really don't want Biden or Trump to be your president. So there's that. That's why we can't have a perfect society that conservatives want right now. I understand. I really do. I'm a very conservative person. I consider myself to agree with a lot of the Freedom Caucus members in terms of their policies. I don't like the government spending a whole bunch. But I mean, what choice do we have right now? We can't pass massive cuts because the Democrats won't vote for it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we tell them or how we try to convince them. They will not vote for it. And they own the Senate and they own the presidency. So there's not much we can do there. So we should have kept McCarthy as speaker, but we didn't keep McCarthy as speaker. So there's chaos in the House now. So that's great. I was when I was voting for the in 2022 for the midterm elections, I marked off Randy Feenstra as my representative. I was thinking, yeah, let's get this chaos going on in the House. I wasn't actually thinking that. I was like, yeah, let's get the House under control and the Senate under control. And then 2 years from now, we can get the presidency under control and then we can get things moving, But no, that didn't happen. So we just got the House and we barely even got the House. So, it works. So there's also chaos on other places in the world. I mean, let's look really quickly at other elections, just briefly. Argentina just had their election last night, and the votes came in. And so I stayed up looking at the votes because I'm a nerd. I like looking at elections in other countries. I know you guys don't, but I do. And so I looked at the election, and it was between what's their names? One of them was a libertarian guy, so he wasn't actually libertarian. He was libertarian when it comes to economy, but when it comes to like social issues or mainly just social issues, foreign policy, I guess, too, he's not libertarian at all. He's hardcore Freedom Caucus Republican, but in Argentina. It's pretty great. I like that guy. His last name is Milei. I don't know his first name. I don't remember his first name. He faced off with Massa, who is the current economic minister, I guess is what they call him. And it was really interesting to watch this because there was one other person running, and this other person running was like, I don't know how I can compare this other person. There were three people running. It was Massa, it was Milei, and the female who was basically Mitt Romney. And she didn't get very much of the vote. Milei got 30% of the vote. I think it was 32% actually, and Massa got 36%. So it was a little bit disappointing. But that doesn't win the election in Argentina. Like in Argentina, you have to get 45% to outright win the election. And if you don't get 45%, you need 40% and a 10-point lead to win the election. And no candidate had that. So there's going to be a runoff on November 17th. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, that's my Argentina very quick take on Argentina elections, if you care. I mean, I do care, but I know you guys don't care about Argentina elections. This is America, America first, right? I love this country. It's amazing. So let's talk about something different. In Ohio right now, there's an election, sort of. It's not an election. It's more like it's more like a poll. I don't know how I define them differently, but it's not electing a new governor. It's electing a new constitutional amendment, and this amendment would legalize abortion forcefully, constitutionally, in the case of Ohio, legalize abortion through birth. And it's this, okay, this makes me a little bit upset because before this amendment, there was another proposed amendment. So let's put this in chronological order real quick. About 2 months ago, there was an amendment going through Ohio, and the people had to vote on whether or not they wanted to raise the limit. So in Ohio, all you need to pass an amendment is 51% of the vote, and the amendment passes. In almost every single other state I can think of off the top of my head, it's you need 66% of the vote or higher to pass an amendment, which is the way it works federally too, because you're not supposed to be amending constitutions constantly. It's supposed to be hard to amend a constitution, right? So you should have a supermajority in order to amend it, not a simple majority. It just makes sense, right? Well, that path or that failed. The reason why that failed is because Democrats in the state said, "Oh no, but if that passes, it's going to be really hard to pass an abortion amendment." And that's actually what they said, that they've had advertisements saying, "Don't vote for this amendment because it'll be hard to legalize abortion through the Constitution." Well, they didn't pass it. And now they're trying to legalize abortion up to birth through the Constitution. And we'll see how this goes. I love Ohio's governor. He's really great. He's been running advertisements telling people not to vote for the amendment because while you may agree with abortion, no one agrees with abortion up until birth, but that is what it's going to do. It's going to legalize abortion up until birth, and no one wants that. So let's slow down. Let's not pass this amendment, and then let's come together and talk this out and decide what really is the middle ground here. By the way, right now, Ohio has passed an abortion ban. It's a heartbeat ban. So basically, if you can detect a heartbeat, you can't abort the child, with exceptions for rape and incest, or the threat. Life, or if the mother's life is threatened by giving birth. That law would be overturned by this amendment that is being proposed if it passes. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. I hope and pray that the amendment does not pass and that Ohio settles down and is like, okay, let's think this over. Let's pass an amendment that says we need a two-thirds vote to pass amendments. So let's reintroduce the last one because it just doesn't make sense. If you can pass amendments super easily and quickly, then what's the point of having an amendment then? Amendments are supposed to be slowly passed, supposed to take a long time to pass them, and they're supposed to be well thought out. But if you just keep bringing up an amendment and shooting it through like the way they just did, they brought up the amendment to say we need a two-thirds vote, and they shot that one through and it failed. And then they brought up an amendment saying that we need abortion up until birth, and they shot that one through, and who knows if it's going to fail or succeed yet. But if you keep doing that over and over again, your constitution and the basis for your entire government, it's not very stable. It can change like that. It doesn't take much. So really what Ohio does need is they need a two-thirds vote to change the amendment. Unfortunately, they don't have that, so they need to pass an amendment that says that. Yeah, I said amendment a lot in that little section there, but it's the way it is. Ohio's getting a little bit crazy. The whole world's getting crazy right now. You look at the Middle East, you look at the United States, you look at China, they seem to be economically failing right now. It's incredible. I mean, not in a good way. I mean, incredible in terms of like I've never seen this before. I'm 19. I haven't seen much before, but I've never seen this specifically before. It's interesting to watch. Real quick thing before we end the episode today. I saw a really funny video on Twitter of what's his name? The guy who the conservative dude who's running against Justin Trudeau in Canada. It's like Pilier or something like that. I'm not too into Canadian politics because they went communist. But Pilier, this guy, he seems interesting. There's a video of him eating an apple while responding to a reporter, and it is hilarious. Let me see if I can. Yeah, I'll just insert the video in here for you guys. You can't see it, but you can hear it. It's amazing. I love it. So here it is.
On the topic, I mean, in terms of your sort of strategy currently, you're obviously taking the populist pathway.
What does that mean?
well, appealing to people's more emotional levels, I would guess. Certainly you tap very strong ideological language quite frequently.
Like what?
Left wing, you know, this and that, right wing, it's that type of ideological thing.
I never really talk about left
but
or right.
Anyways,
really believe in that.
Okay. A lot of people would say that you're simply taking a page out of the Donald Trump book.
Like which people would say that?
Well, I'm sure a great many Canadians, but...
Like who?
I don't know who, but...
Well, you're the one who asked the question, so yeah. You must know somebody.
Okay. I'm sure there's some out there, but anyways, the point of this question is, I mean, why should Canadians trust you with their vote, given... You know, not just the sort of ideological inclination in terms of taking the page of Donald Trump's book, but
what are you
also
talking about? What page? Can you give me a page? Give me the page. You keep saying
in terms
that.
In terms of turning things quite dramatically in terms of Trudeau and the left wing and all of this. I mean, you make quite a it's quite a play that you make on it. So I'm
not
just
sure.
Wondering.
I don't know what your question
is. Then forget that. Why should Canadians trust you with their vote?
Common sense.
Okay.
Common sense for a change. We're going to make common sense common in this country. We don't have any common sense in the current government. You know, the guy prints $600 billion, grows our money supply by 32% in 3 years. That's growing the money 8 times faster than the economy. No wonder we have the worst inflation in 4 decades. I'm going to cap spending, cut waste, so that we can balance the budget and bring down inflation and interest rates. You'll want to be able to pay your mortgage again. You want to be able to afford rent. Then you have to vote for Pierre Poilievre.
Okay, with that done, let me just say, I really wish American politicians could do this. I mean, the closest thing we have right now is Vivek Ramaswamy, who can respond like that. And Ron DeSantis. But Vivek Ramaswamy changes his mind on everything, so we gotta exclude him from it. So Ron DeSantis. But like, that was amazing. They should have a college specifically for politicians or people who want to become politicians, and they should teach them how to respond to reporters like that. So Hillsdale, if you listen to this episode, add this to your classes, because that is amazing. I love that. But yeah, that's the end of the episode for today, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Catch y'all later. God bless you. Adios.